From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I have directed my staff to treat payments for all elected officials just like every other state payment. This means that I, along with the state treasurer, the secretary of state, the attorney general, lieutenant governor, governor, and the 177 members of the General Assembly will wait to receive our pay just like everyone else.
The part that I owe would be covered by MAP grant if there was a budget passed, but unfortunately it hasn't been a budget passed. So I've had to ask my mother, who's 73, my auntie, who's in her 70s, to help fund my last part of my education.
That means that people like me that are trying to better themselves are, you know, kind of unable to because, you know, we have to instead stay home and get a job with minimum wage.
I actually saw one of my old professors in the airport. He works at Texas because of all the stuff that's been happening in the state.
I'm very frustrated with the budget impasse issues, and I received a 30-day layoff notice as of yesterday.
We want to see all of higher education funded, but right now, this stopgap would provide the critical piece to bridge us across.
But the fact is, this is not going to solve a long-term problem. It's only going to make it worse. What we ought to be saying is, Governor, the bills are on your desk right now to fix this. Quit putting a gun to Chicago State's head.
Some of the voices were around the State House this week after months of inaction on the state budget. Maybe a ray of hope as a deal to provide some partial funding is approved by the House and Senate. The governor expected to sign it, partial funding for higher education. And lawmakers are told to get in line when it comes to their paychecks. We'll talk about that and more. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford on State Week in Review. And today, our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, who runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio reporter, and Jamie Dunn, our Illinois Issues editor. Well, as we recorded this show, we were hearing that the House and the Senate had both adopted a partial spending plan for higher education. Let's start with that. Brian, why don't you give us the quick rundown of what this does? When we say partial, we do mean partial.
Yeah, definitely partial. It's 30% funding for most, roughly 30% funding for most state universities, including the University of Illinois system where we work and where we're taping this show. It's 60% funding, a little more for Chicago State. There's also money for community colleges, as well as what are known as MAP grants. That's the state assistance for low-income individuals to help them go to – but that's for both public and private universities.
Well, the governor had said before he wanted to make sure the money was there. Charlie Wheeler, the money, I guess, is there. It's in a special fund to let people know where that's coming from.
Yeah, it's money that in a sense can only be used for education anyway. It's from something called the Education Assistance Fund. And back when riverboat gambling was authorized, and I believe it was 1989, a provision was that the state's receipts, its tax receipts, would go into the special fund and be used for education. And then there was a portion of the income tax increase that rolled back also was dedicated to this fund. And so the money is there, and it can't be used for anything else. So it's not like found money. It's money that in the normal course of events would have been appropriated last summer for the universities.
Well, we know that both Chicago State had talked about closing down. Other schools had talked about the possibility of that. If there's not some money flowing, there's been discussion of layoffs. In fact, the University of Illinois coming out this week, a plan that at least was on the table saying that some civil service workers on the Urbana campus could be laid off. Things getting progressively worse with higher education because of the lack of a budget. That being said, we all work for a public radio station which is based through the University of Illinois, except for Charlie, but he's also a U of I employee. So we all have been watching this. We've all been waiting to see what's going to happen. 30% or so for University of Illinois and just a little bit more or less for some other schools doesn't necessarily give me a lot of feeling as though this gets us very far. Jamie Dunn?
I think the thought of a lot of the folks supporting this and what they've been saying is that the hope would be to bridge schools to the fall semester when there'll be tuition coming in and potentially to get a bridge to a time when there could be an agreement on some kind of tax increase, some kind of new revenue, which, you know, seems unlikely to happen before the November general election. So this is being described as a bridge. Whether it actually will be a bridge or not, we'll see. I think that university presidents have to be a little nervous that this may be all that they're going to get for the current fiscal year.
It's like one of those bridges that they, you know, build part of it and then they stop, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah,
is that where we're heading?
Bridge to nowhere.
Or maybe it's one of those like rope bridges where you kind of wobble your way across a huge gorge and just hope you don't slip in. Yeah, I mean, this is like we said, it's a third of the money that most of these universities would expect to get. And we have schools that have laid off hundreds of people if you count them all together at Western, at Eastern, at Southern. One of the voices we heard at the top of the show was a Western Illinois employee who said she got her layoff notice. So whether this amount of money is enough to get them through for that, I mean, we've had universities talking about authorizing potentially tapping into maintenance bond money that they had gathered to help their infrastructure and using that for operations in an emergency. They haven't done that yet, but the Board of Trustees at one of the schools authorized that. So it's certainly – I think Jamie's right. This is something where the universities have to be wondering, my goodness, is this all we're going to get for this year? And you know, it's great to be able to not have – if Chicago State doesn't have to close fully. But as one of the legislators pointed out, this just sort of delays the inevitable day of reckoning.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the thing to look at. We've already gone more than three quarters of the way through the fiscal year. So in a sense, if you're getting 30% of what your full year budget would have been, and we're perhaps 80% of the way through the fiscal year, there should be enough to tide you over. But the real fear is that, as we were saying earlier, this might be a bridge to nowhere and nothing is done for FY17.
I mean, some of these schools have been spending at, you know, 90 probably or 100% of what they normally would get. So getting 30% for a fiscal year going to create some real holes, I would think.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was trying to butt in there with is that while we're seeing some of these layoffs happening and cost-saving measures happening, at the same time, these schools are doing their best to appear stable, to try to attract students. High school seniors are currently, you know, very close to having to make their choice and lock in where they're going. I believe that's May 1st. So we, you know, we're seeing some cost-saving measures, but I highly doubt it's enough to make up this cut if they do, in fact, see something like a 70% cut for this fiscal year.
Jamie, let's talk about how this came about, because we have sat here and said, you know, everybody is not – nobody's getting along. Everybody is at each other's throats. The governor doesn't like Speaker Madigan, vice versa, all of this. How did this finally happen, and does it bode well, or can we read anything into it going forward?
It could. I mean, this was an agreement that came about amongst rank-and-file lawmakers, and the speaker, one of his top lieutenants, did put a bill on the floor, Barbara Flynn Curry, that would have spent a lot more money, would have tapped into general revenue funds. It's something that the governor definitely would not have signed, would not have supported, and that bill didn't really find support. She withdrew it, and you know, they moved on to this agreement. Now, they didn't call it for a vote yesterday when that was expected, but it ended up, you know, coming back around today. So the rank and file kind of hung in on this deal that they had made. Now, there are other things swirling as we tape this as far as what's going to happen with social services. So this is not 100% a done deal, but it looks, you know, pretty close. And a lot of folks got up on the floor, both in the House and the Senate. Speaker Rodonio in the Senate got up and said, hey, this is a good sign. I hope that we can start to work together. This is an example to see how we could work together on other things.
Well, the governor has said that he would sign, or at least the representations were that the governor will sign this bill, right?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I mean, it certainly is a hopeful sign, I think, that people can get together on something, but it took nearly a disaster in terms, especially what's happening to Chicago State University, in order for that to happen. And on that front, I guess there is cause to be optimistic. The governor had in the past said that he would only negotiate on the budget if the legislators adopted these points of his pro-business, anti-union turnaround agenda, right, which include workers' compensation and changing the lawsuit system and also making it so that unions couldn't bargain over wages and things like that with local governments. So I guess it is a hopeful sign that Republicans were able to go along with this and the governor was able to go along with it without, you know, and negotiate on some budgeting measures without that attached. On the other hand, this is free money, as we pointed out earlier. They didn't have to take a really difficult vote. They didn't have to make taxes higher or impose a new tax on services, as has been discussed by the governor in the past. So this is still should have been a relatively easy thing to do, and the difficult votes are still ahead.
Now, when you think about higher ed going forward or anything in the budget, the state has run out of money to some extent, and yet it has a lot of services not being funded. So more revenue is going to be needed, or some major cuts, or probably a little bit of both. So a lot of work still to be done. We're talking about a little over a month left before the scheduled adjournment of the legislative session. So does anybody really think that this leads us down some path over the next just 4 or 5 weeks to getting something accomplished? Or is this going to be something that's going to be worked on throughout the summer, hopefully, and maybe into the fall? I mean, anybody optimistic, I guess?
I mean, I think we have seen a few things happen this week that could be looked at as efforts to address some parts of the governor's turnaround agenda. We saw property tax freeze move forward. There are supposedly some conversations going on behind the scenes about workers' compensation. So there is a possibility that, you know, we could see some compromises on some of those issues, which then would leave, if that happened, still the budget question to figure out, which is not going to be easy, and they don't have a lot of time left. I still think it would be pretty unlikely that we would see a tax increase before the November general election.
Charlie?
Yeah, I think that's probably true, although if you actually look at the lineup, there are majorities in both the Senate and the House who do not have a challenge in November. And as long as they show up at the poll and vote for themselves, they'll be reelected. So it's not really I'm sacrificing my whole career by voting for a tax increase. What it takes is, I guess, a little bit of courage, or as Rod Blagojevich might say, what did he say, testicular
fortitude.
So, yeah, Charlie, you're absolutely right. And I think something to watch for would be if the governor starts to soften his rhetoric around the tax increase. He's definitely been kind of quiet this week, but the last few weeks before this week, he'd been talking a lot about how the speaker and the Democrats just want to raise your taxes without reform. If we see him kind of ease up on that a little bit, it might be a good sign. As Charlie points out, there's lots of folks who don't have a challenger, but as long as he's beating up on the Democrats publicly about a tax increase, it seems unlikely that Madigan and some of the folks in charge would want to move that forward to just give him more to beat up on them about.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen unless the governor is on board. And so to me, I'm thinking, if I'm the governor, do I want to keep trash-talking the tax increase when ultimately chances are I'm going to have to approve it?
Rod Blagojevich also said they like to spin like drunken sailors. So.
And just a fact check, it was testicular virility.
That's right, virility.
Yeah. Virility, right.
Well, one of the tax ideas that's being floated, let's switch gears here a little bit. And Jamie, you've covered this, the graduated income tax idea. This is being floated again. It would take a change in the Constitution. What are they talking about doing here, and how much money could they see from it if it became law?
Yeah, so there is legislation that would kind of be a companion to the amendment to the Constitution. Currently, our state constitution calls for a flat tax. This amendment would just take out that requirement, which would allow a graduated income tax if lawmakers wanted to approve one. Lou Lang has a bill that sets out brackets and rates. When we saw the push for this in 2014, those brackets and rates were quite a bit more aggressive than this round. So it wouldn't bring in as much money as proposals in the past have, would have. It's just under about $2 billion in additional revenue. So that doesn't by any means solve, the budget problem or get us out of the deficit. But the folks who are supporting this say, we need to look to the long term. This is a more sustainable way to raise revenue. They see it as a more fair way to raise revenue. Opposition folks are arguing that Illinois is already kind of struggling in its economy and trying to attract business, and this would just be another negative on the list of many negatives when businesses are looking at Illinois.
Although one would point out that all our neighboring states have graduated tax rates with the exception of Indiana.
Yeah, and I would think the backers would also point out that most people in Illinois would actually get a tax cut under this plan. Currently, the income tax rate for everybody from Governor Rauner to the janitor somewhere, is 3.75%. 3.75%. This would make it 3.5% for at least for joint filers making less than $200,000 a year, and individuals who are making $100,000 or less. So a lot in the average. I think the median income in Illinois is $54,000, something like that. So a lot of people would actually see their taxes go down slightly, at least. But it would have that, as you pointed out, Jamie. The opponents say we're going to see the millionaires fleeing the state. So it would certainly have a much higher rate at the top end of the spectrum. If you make more than $1.5 million a year, 9.75%.
Yeah, and I think that was a very deliberate choice by supporters and kind of a smart choice. Last time they were moving this forward in 2014, some of the lower brackets, the rate was 5%, which was the current income tax rate, but was due to roll back. So opponents were able to frame it as, well, this is really going to be a tax increase for those folks because they would have seen their rate rolled back. But if you put this in place, it's going to stay where it is. Still, this is going to be a really tough climb. There's already a few Democrats in the House who have said that they don't support it. So it would take Republican votes, which seems very unlikely right now. But who knows? Things are kind of a little crazy this week, and it feels like you can't predict what's going on. So you never know if they could, you know, turn some folks to this concept. They've got lawmakers are out next week, and then the next week after that, the first week of May is when they would have to get it through to get it on the ballot.
And there's some other constitutional amendment ideas that are floating around. Ones I know that one would do away with the state comptroller's office. One would do away, I believe, with the lieutenant governor's office. There's some other things, redistricting. Anything that seems to be, I mean, from what you guys have seen in the legislature so far this year and all the discussion on it, anything that seems like it's primed to possibly go to the ballot and let voters decide that this fall?
Well, yeah, you mentioned the lieutenant governor elimination that passed the House on Friday, I believe, but it failed in the Senate the day before. So that one doesn't seem to be going anywhere. One of the things where there's been a lot of attention this year is on changing the way legislators' maps are drawn, legislative districts are drawn. The governor has made that part of his turnaround agenda, one of the key things he wanted to see happen before he'd negotiate on the budget. Meanwhile, there's been this independent group out there collecting signatures to put it on the ballot that would create an independent commission that would draw the districts. Supporters of this say it could break – it's not appropriate for legislators to be able to gerrymander their districts so that they have an easier time. As Charlie pointed out earlier, the vast majority of legislators have no opponents this year because they're in safe districts, and it's a huge hill to overcome to try and defeat them. On the other hand, opponents, particularly Republicans, have said, you know, Democrats have drawn themselves such favorable districts that it gives them a disproportionate share of the seats in the legislature based on how many people, vote Democratic versus Republican in the state. So getting to what actually happened this week, there's a plan that's been floated in the House. Events are still developing, but last I checked, it had not advanced there. A separate plan did pass in the Senate, but that one has not gotten the stamp of approval from the reformers, who say it doesn't go far enough and still leaves the legislators too involved.
You know, it seems to me that the cynic in me says that when you have all those going like that, what it enables lawmakers to do is to vote for different ones, none of them getting enough support. Like you said, I think they have to give 71 votes for any of those to get on the ballot. And it allows them to all say they supported this idea without actually getting anything moving. So is that – Charlie, do you expect that's what we'll see? You've been watching this process for years, and people have tried to perform it before.
Yeah, and what you point out, the competing versions that allow everyone to say, yes, I voted for it, that's not something new. That's been going on as long as I've been watching this stuff. And usually it's stuff that is popular with the folks back home, but which lawmakers really don't want to see happen. And typically in the past, it's dealt with things like putting tighter ethics laws in place, restricting the use of campaign money, that kind of thing, where the House would vote one version, the Senate would vote another, and everybody go home and say, oh yeah, I voted for reform. And it's the guys across the rotunda who wouldn't get the job done.
Well, and that's why it's interesting to see this independent group that's out there. They have a couple of hurdles to overcome. One is getting enough signatures, because that's what kept them off the ballot 2 years ago when they tried to get on the first time. They say that they're collecting a lot more this time, that they should have more than enough to meet the requirements for that. But then it has to withstand a legal challenge, which you never know how those things are going to go, are going to work out. They say in this case that they think it would pass legal muster, but we saw a different effort to put term limits on legislators get thrown out by the courts before the 2014 elections.
Well, that's true, and that one was no surprise because the courts, like 30 years earlier, had thrown out Pat Quinn's attempt to put term limits on the ballot using the Citizens Initiative. But the remap push in 2014 was ruled unconstitutional, but the Cook County Circuit Court judge in her ruling said it was specifically because the proposed amendment would limit one's ability to run for elective office. And she said, you're changing the requirements or the qualifications under the executive article, and the citizens' initiative can only pertain to the legislative article. And she kind of suggested that a different version of a remap amendment would be fine if you didn't have this limitation on people serving.
And so the idea one that's, being that if I got myself elected this independent commission and drew the map and then said, oh, you know what, I think I'd like to run for this seat.
And what they said was that you can't run for 10 years. And Judge Mikva said, no, you can't put that in there.
And one other thing we want to touch on this week certainly is Leslie Munger. Well, she still has a position as controller before that might be eliminated. Who knows? That position there, it is the one that cuts the checks for the state of Illinois and makes sure that bills get paid. She's having to juggle quite a bit because the state's not having the cash flow to be able to pay everything that's coming in. So she made an announcement this week that state lawmakers are going to be getting in line along with others and having to wait. And in some cases, that could be several weeks. It could be several months for their paychecks. Jamie Dunn, does this have an impact?
I think it could. I mean, there are lawmakers who this is their only job and it's their only paycheck. And they could look at folks like the Speaker and the Senate President and Munger herself and the governor and think, you know, they were probably going to get by, but this is going to be difficult for me. So it could cause some frustration. We're not hearing the backlash to it that we heard, say, when Pat Quinn vetoed out the paycheck money. And of course, that was found unconstitutional because partially if you went, you know, on the street and asked folks, should lawmakers and constitutional officers be getting paid while the budget hasn't been passed and all these other groups are waiting for money, a lot of people would probably say, no, they shouldn't. So it's been, you know, a little bit quieter of a response than when something similar has been tried.
It's hard to feel sorry for the lawmakers not getting paid when the lady that did the butter cow sculpture at the state fair last year was still waiting to be paid. So I you can understand where that's coming from. Well, she is up for election. I do want to say she's up for election this fall. So this could be viewed as, again, a political move, but yeah, it's pretty good one, I'd think.
It's the right thing to do, though, and particularly my guess is that there is no legislator who is in as dire condition as some people who are human service providers or some of the frail elderly, some of the people battling mental illness or drug addiction who depended on not-for-profit organizations to literally allow them to live. And we've stopped funding these entirely. So it's hard to feel sorry for a legislator, even if it is their only job. They're not going to be homeless out on the street. They're not going to be without the needed services to enable them to function as a human being, as these other people whose voices are not as loud as university presidents or parents of kids who are not getting their the courses they want at the university because there's no funding.
Yeah, and in a way, you mentioned her opponent, who is the Chicago City Clerk, Susana Mendoza. She said, you know, I applaud the move, but it should have been done 10 months ago. Maybe we would have brought a resolution to this sooner. And I think that's a great point, Charlie, is that this is yet another I'm glad to see another pressure point being added on because, like with this higher ed funding fix, while it's great that, you know, universities are not going to have to shut and hopefully some people who had been laid off might be able to get their jobs back or at least more people won't be laid off. On the other hand, every time you put a little Band-Aid on this gaping wound, it just delays coming to some sort of final resolution of this, and people can sort of breathe easier and say, okay, well, now let's take a break. The legislature, as you mentioned, Jamie's going to be off for Passover next week. And, you know, meanwhile, things continue to burn, metaphorically speaking, out there.
Well, I don't want to act like, one thing leads to another, but she makes this announcement over the weekend, and here we are suddenly with some higher ed funding. We see people starting to work together a little bit more. And nobody publicly, at least in the legislature, has come out and said this is a bad idea or they shouldn't do this. But I have a feeling there are discussions going on behind the scenes that, you know, leaders may be hearing about this and others that, you know, hey, we can't go this long, you know, without pay just like anybody else. So, I mean, does anybody think that it really is having an impact on the overall budget process?
I'm sure that there's some behind-the-scenes complaints and maybe some pressure, but I would say this week the looming closure of Chicago State was probably the biggest pressure point that got this done.
Yeah, and because it's one thing waiting for a paycheck that you know is going to come eventually. I mean, you can even go to a payday loaner somewhere if worst comes to worst, which is entirely different from there not being any money coming with any degree of certitude ever.
She is, from what I gathered too, did not run this past at least the legislature. She may have run it past the governor's office. I don't know. She said she did not.
I read that she gave him about an hour heads up before her news conference, the legislative leaders. Yeah.
So again, I mean, I think that it's a bit of a brilliant strike there, probably politically at least. You know, we'll see how it plays out. If people don't pay a lot of attention to the controller's race usually, especially this year. It's going to be out there kind of by itself and statewide. But at the same time, does help her probably in that respect.
Yeah, and it is extraordinary. This is the controller's in office that's usually pretty sleepy. You don't really hear much about it. And it's I think it's almost and Charlie, you'll probably correct me on this, but a functionary office if things are running as they should in state government.
Which is a big if,
Yeah, well. So, but here she is this year having to prioritize these payments. And like you said, at least the legislators are still in line, just delayed. There are a lot of human service providers out there who are not even in line yet and worry that they may never be put in line, even though the governor and the administration has entered into contracts with these groups to provide services to some vulnerable populations in the state of Illinois. They're not even in line yet to be paid. So we're, you know, unless the legislature ever comes around to appropriating money for that.
Well, and I think to Brian's point that, you know, we're going to see some of these pressure points taken away. Higher ed, it looks like, you know, that's going to happen. Maybe some social service funding coming through as well. The person who's reading these stories out there in the world and maybe not paying close attention to this could think, oh, well, the impasse is over. They've got it cleared up. And that will absolutely not be the case. Lots of social service agencies, whatever they come up with, likely will not get funding. And there's still the issue of, you know, prisoners. There's Leader Redonio brought this up on the floor today. We have to worry about how we're going to feed prisoners and how we're going to cover their medical care and all these contractors that we're not paying. They have to worry about how they're going to pay to keep, literally to keep the lights on in a lot of places because the government is, state government's not paying its electric bills and its water bills. So having this, you know, continued pressure point as the impasse drags on could be a good thing.
Time now for Notes from the Field. Brian Mackey.
Yeah, speaking of the state not paying its electric bills, the Department of Natural Resources announced this week it was closing Ramsey Lake and Horseshoe Lake, to a state park and a state recreation area, because of an unpaid trash bill and an unpaid electric bill. The totals were $3,500 in trash and about $2,500 in electric bills.
Jamie Dunn.
There was some interesting debate this week, and women out there will probably be happy to hear that a measure to move forward to remove sales tax on tampons and women's feminine products is moving ahead in the legislature. This has kind of been a national trend. We're seeing a lot of cities and states look at this, exempting these products from the sales tax. So Illinois is jumping on board with that as well.
And Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the Department of Revenue announced earlier this week that it had overpaid local governments to the tune of $168 million for money that is due them from what's called the Personal Property Replacement Tax Fund. It's a 2.5% surcharge on corporate income, which was enacted to replace an old tax on personal property. And because the old personal property tax went to local governments, the new replacement tax was allocated among local governments, and the Department of Revenue said, oh, for the last couple of years, we had some errors in the calculations, and guess what? You owe us $168 million, and we want it back because we really need the money.
The bank error not in your favor. Members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Jamie Dunn. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.